Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the HOSPO Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly HOSPO Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hey, it's Ken Bergen here. Welcome to the latest HOSPO Reset podcast, and really happy to have my guest today, who's Leanne Hughes. She's a team culture expert and facilitates a lot of training and development activities for lots of companies in Australia, around the world. We've connected over the last couple of years through her excellent podcast called The Flip Chart, first-time facilitator, and she's got an excellent Facebook group too, which I really like being part of. Yeah, today I really want to talk about this topic of facilitation, because I really want to try and crack this nut, this problem as I see it, of people get very anxious and fearful about the word training. It's not that we don't all believe in it in the world of small business and hospitality, but as soon as you say the T word, training, people start thinking about it takes too much time. Oh my God, I haven't got spare staff. And I mean, we have to close for half a day and all sorts of things like that. And my experience has lots of ways around that. I actually was looking at some articles that I wrote little while ago. One's called 10-minute training and another one's called 20-minute training, but just the idea of a little and often. And I think that the role of a facilitator, a person who makes things happen, might be a way to cut through some of the fear, uncertainty and doubt, the fun factor. Hey, Leanne, I've done all the talking. How are you?
I love it. And it just reminds me, I don't know if you remember that movie, There's Something About Mary. There's a scene in that movie when he's picked up the hitchhiker and the hitchhiker is talking about 8-minute abs and how he's going to bring out 7-minute abs. And there's a scene where he's like, no, you can't have 7-minute abs. Like, you can't get the results. And I think it just opens up a great conversation around, you know, how long is a piece of string? How much time do you need? And it is about getting the results. What can you do?
Yeah. So just tell us a bit about the sort of facilitation, you know, how you started in that, because it's a term that we need to unpack a little bit, because it's not one that's commonly used in the world that I work in, hospitality, but maybe more in the corporate world. I don't know. But I think you've actually probably pioneered the term and made it a little more popular and understood.
I hope so. I hope I've made it accessible because, when I was sort of growing up, I think I've always loved the nature of facilitation and creating great group experiences. One of my earliest memories was at a five-year-old birthday party. And I remember my parents picking me up at the end of the afternoon and I was so bored. I was like, that was the worst birthday party ever because there were no activities. It wasn't structured in a great way. And this is like Leanne as a five-year-old talking. And I played netball pretty competitively. We did a lot of playing at a certain level. We had sports psychologists come in. They did things like emotional intelligence. We had great conversations. And I thought, geez, I'd love to do whatever they do. And then I got kind of sidetracked into the world of marketing, Ken. And it was only an internal opportunity when I was working in Western Australia that then I got into a role in training and development. And I thought, wow, there's actually quite interesting links between what I love, you know, hosting great events and you know, parties and gatherings with marketing, with actually helping people come together to get a result. And then that sort of weaved a path where I worked for a corporate role where I was very lucky to travel around the world. My first sort of big role was running leadership sessions in Fort McMurray, Canada. And that's where things sort of went wrong in a classroom. And I got back to Australia. I rang all my facilitation and training friends and I said, how would you have like picked this workshop up?
How did it go wrong? Were people just not engaged or you didn't get through the content?
There was one activity in the afternoon. So in mining, they do something called a pre-start where it's all about getting up in front of the group, you know, similar to what you'd see. I don't know if some of your restaurants would do it, but they get all the staff together. They talk through what's going on that day. Mm-hmm. In your context, it might be bookings, big bookings or events. In mining,
it's a bit of a huddle.
And so we're doing like an activity where they got to practice those skills. And one of the supervisors just felt very uncomfortable about getting up in front of a group and doing it. I hadn't created the psychological safety for him to do that. He decided to not do it. Then the next person decided not to do it. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to intervene here. Right. So I did
and
pick
you,
it up.
You as this kind of loudmouth foreigner.
Oh yeah, and I'm the only female Ken as well. Like this is like these 30 miners. I'm Leanne from corporate. this Australian that's jet lagged has no idea about Canadian culture. Just like, you know, and I was a first time facilitator. My manager knew he was putting me into the deep, and he knew that I could pick it up. And look, as a result of that, that's why I started the podcast, because it was such a painful thing. And I'm sure there's people doing it.
We all have those crash and burn moments. So I'm thinking of one that I'd love to repeat.
Oh, I'd love to, maybe offline.
Okay. So thinking about one of the nice things about talking to people about hospitality is everyone experiences it as a customer. It's like, I don't know anything about mining and I'm unlikely to ever experience it, but you've experienced hospitality as a consumer and the kind of needs that you kind of, we all sit in situations sometimes and say, oh my God, I wish there was a little bit, I wish they'd been a bit trained better or something like that. But just before we get into that, what do you see that difference between a trainer and a facilitator, well, you know, traditionally or, you know, in modern kind of terms?
This is, Ken, you alluded to the Facebook group, the flip chart, and every couple of months this question comes up, facilitator or trainer, what do you define? And it actually creates like a lot of conversation. So I actually think there's like a third path, and I'm going to call it, like, this is where I go. First of all, a trainer, I believe, is a transfer of specific skills and knowledge in order to do a job. So you think of like barista training, right? You need to know how to make a latte, like coffee art, food handling, food service, all that sort of like the hygiene side of things. Facilitation is where you're driving a group together and the assumed knowledge that the group actually knows, has the knowledge within the group. And as a facilitator, you're working to connect people to the conversation, to the content, to extract that. And I think my style is, I call myself like a facilitrainer, which is like I'll go into companies and run leadership courses, but it's not me lecturing people on how to become a better leader. It's all about creating like a framework for conversation, getting them to share their stories and learn from each other. So they're still getting the skill and knowledge development. It's just that I'm not coming in as like the go-to expert on leadership. I recognize, and like you said, you alluded to, my problem in Canada was I went in thinking I'm the leadership expert here. When I went to India a year and a half ago, when I'm a bit more mature, the first thing I said to the group was, look, I'm not a project construction manager. Like, you're the experts in that field. What I am an expert in is getting you to share your stories and learning from each other so that over the next 3 days you'll be a better leader. So that's the difference.
Yeah. You're reminding me of some training as a trainer that I did years ago, and the guy who did it, it's actually Robert Kiyosaki, who, you know, the Rich Dad Poor Dad guy, and he was doing all sorts of things. And he asked us, he said, so as someone who's going to be training, what gear, say it was a car, what gear would you be? You know, first, second, third, reverse, neutral, drive. Everyone's puzzled, and, oh, drive, whatever. And he said, no, reverse gear, because you've got to pull it out of people. A lot of people, it's exactly what you're saying, you know, they actually know a lot of this. So there may be some new stuff that you've got to impart as well, but they know a lot. So they certainly know the lived experience of things that when it hasn't worked or when it has worked. And when I say that to people, I actually feel a little bit more relieved in a way, but you've still got to have confidence to approach to the group and say, okay, so, well, how does this bit apply to us, or when didn't it work? And then wait for them, get them to answer.
It actually, as you said, it takes a lot of courage and experience to move that, which sounds very counterintuitive. You think, like, but I remember back to being that first-time facilitator, studying the content so insanely, like just trying to get the models right and the examples. And I was forgetting it was all about the group, and that's the shift.
The models and the framework and the books and all that. And
the TED Talks.
You're going absolutely terrified and a bundle of nerves.
Yeah, because you think, and then you think, oh, gosh, what do I do if I'm put on the spot and someone asks a question I don't know the answer? And now I'm like, it's really different. And I mean, something I share on the show that you've heard is that concept of lazy facilitation, just remembering you know, you're there to
getting
extract
people to do the work. And, and it's such a joy. You know it, I know it. I'm sure lots of people listening where you've got a room where maybe it's 10 people or maybe it's 50 or whatever, and your job is to pick on people in a good sense, not in a sense of harassment, but just got to start getting ideas out of people and get them speaking up. And that's where it's nice now that, I mean, if you've got a room that's big enough and people can just put their hand up. But for, say, it's thinking back to a workshop, it's actually one of the last ones I did pre-COVID in Brisbane. We had about 60 people in the room and everyone was so excited to meet other cafe and restaurant owners. It was really great. But you know, for everyone who will put their hand up when I raise a kind of a knotty issue, you know, what do you think? There's another, you know, most people just don't put their hands up.
No.
It's just not safe or not familiar, or it's, you know, what we think is is familiar territory. We're never more comfortable than a room like this. For most people, it's not.
That's it. That's really important to remember. And again, one of my rookie mistakes was assuming that everyone was as keen as I was. Because, like, I think, Ken, if you and I were both in a workshop room together, we'd be the ones, like, putting our hands up in the front row.
Yeah,
and
couldn't shut us up.
Yeah, yeah. So then there's that bias of, well, everyone else must be that way. And so then, I mean, the good thing about facilitation and even some, like, adult training techniques is that there's models, you've heard of them, 1-2-4 all, where you get people just talking to the person beside them, building up their confidence and sharing that before you actually move to sharing with the group, and how you build that up over time. That's the skill of a facilitator as well.
Mm. And it's nice now that there's technology we can use for some of those things as well, not just about Zoom training and online, which we'll talk about, but, you know, whether it's everyone just grab their phone, we're going to do a quiz, or we're going to do a survey, just kind of open it up on this app or something like that, and people, and that seems to get a lot more activity happening online.
Yeah, it really does. One of my first sort of corporate gigs out when I left, my consulting gigs was when I went to Hong Kong, and I was really curious around what it was like to train in Southeast Asia, knowing that it's very hierarchical, people are afraid to speak up. So I used Mentimeter in a live environment, and the juice that we got from everyone, the engagement, being able to, Ken, I know you love to run quizzes. It was sensational, right? Like, and people then can see the data that encourages further conversation. Yeah, love
totally it. A safe space on your phone is the safest space for most people.
It is. It is. I can feel like I can be truly honest. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say it's a new manager who's moved into a large group is, you know, before you know it, most hospitality groups or restaurants, there's 30 people, part-time, full-time, whatever, and they've identified, you know, a wide range of skill shortages, nothing dramatic, otherwise the people wouldn't be working there, but lots of things that they want to be bringing up to date, and they understand that there's just no budget or time for training as such. Well, what are some suggestions you have that if they change their mindset to facilitation, that maybe we could kind of get some activities happening?
Yeah. A couple of things. First of all, because I'm a facilitator, again, I have that bias that, yeah, let's just run a workshop. But I think there are some ways. And I reflect, Ken, when I finished up university, I actually spent 2 years in the UK and Ireland working at bars and coffee shops. And the value of being trained by someone who's actually really great at that skill, as opposed to, I mean, the person that's training you will actually have like the biggest impact on your skill performance there. So if there's people that have, if you were to map your team and just find out what the unique strengths are in terms of who you've got, and then maybe assigning buddies that way, I think that would be a first step because of the time limitation. With facilitation though, there's two outcomes I think that are really important. So the first one is the rational outcome that we often think about, like the skill development. How good are you at making coffee? How good are you at greeting people? How good are you at turning over tables? And then there's the experiential outcome, which is how connected to this business do you feel? How connected to other people do you feel? And I think that's the value of great facilitators will bring in both. So with training, it's not a case of, I would actually, if I'm trying to influence a man to do this, I would actually promote a lot of the experiential things, because what are business owners facing right now? It's inability to hire people, the turnover. So that loyalty and connection to the business is quite important, and training is an investment in your people.
Mm. Yeah, I like to flip this kind of great resignation thing. I think it's a bit of a cliche, but it's just like, really, rather than thinking I can't find people, it's just like, okay, maximum effort's going to go into no one's going to leave. No one's going to want to leave.
Yes.
And then we've solved most of the problem. So, okay, interesting. There's kind of like these hard skills, soft skills. Is that real? Or you're really talking about culture, development of the culture in the place?
Yeah. And where that really struck me was back when I worked in corporate, I was asked to facilitate a 3-day strategy day for my organization's executive team. And what I found most interesting is the CEO said, look, yes, the strategy is important, but most importantly, I just want us to have time to have a conversation, because I never got that time. Now, that is not a hard outcome. That's an experience. Uh-huh. But doing that, then you start creating the relationships that over the long term will end up actually being an investment into the business.
Yes.
So that's when it really struck me, was like, oh, wow. So, because again, Ken, I was like looking at all the strategy models and processes. And then when we were there, I was like, actually, my role is to make sure that people are being heard, that relationships are being built so that when they go back to work, they can actually, they're more united, more collaborative.
And lots of conversations that don't happen other times.
That's it. Yeah. And what you might think is, sorry, just to jump in there, what you might think is lacking in skill, like maybe someone's coffee making ability, could be the system or the process. And it's not until you have a conversation that's surfaced that you recognize that, oh, this isn't a training problem, it might be something else. So, yeah, it's quite multifaceted.
Yeah. So thinking back to your time in the bars in Ireland and the UK, what if you had your time again and they invited you back to run some sessions, well, what are some things that you think would be appropriate or, you know, would get a big take up from a fairly transitory workforce?
Yeah, well, Ken, you're leading the charge on this, would be like those TikTok, those sort of micro videos, I think, because I was working in a pub in Ireland, right, and I had to pour pints of Guinness, and you've got to make sure they're good. Well, I was living in Cork, so it was pints of Beamish, but getting that head right is such an important part of Irish pub culture. So, yeah. I mean, a lot of the time I was wasting just a ton of beer, but it would have been helpful if it was like, hey, just get this video up, get it, look at this angle, right? Pour for this amount of time, like actually have the amount of time it takes to pour it, let it set, you wait. Micro videos like that would be fantastic. I mean, a lot of these places I was working at, like you said, high turnover, having to upskill people really quickly. So I think the budding process would be really good too. But just finding ways to, you know, even an internal podcast would be great, where you set like, this is the culture, this is how we talk to people.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I know you've been a big advocate of, you know, webinars and YouTube videos actually should be podcasts as well. And I'm just thinking of a program I'm part of at the minute where they're doing really fantastic. It's all about, you know, website development, the fantastic content, but it's all on YouTube. And I want it on a podcast while I walk around because that's my number one channel for taking in information. Yeah, interesting. Internal podcast. Well, how would I do that?
Yeah, how would you do that? So it's very easy. I shouldn't say that. People are like, it's not easy. Like, just give me the steps. I mean, there's a tool I use. It's called Hello Audio. So basically, if you can hop on a Zoom call, if you can talk into your phone using voice notes, save it as an MP3, you can upload it to a platform called Hello Audio. What it does is it creates a link. So you can either do it two ways. One is when you get a new sign up, a new employee, you could either even text them the link so they can install the podcast on their phone. Or you can add them as if you're worried about security and what someone does if they leave. Basically, you just add your employees in the back end. They get sent an email and it's set up that way. It's very easy to do. Mm. And I've got a friend actually, Ken. She recently started at a Brisbane startup. And she sent me a text. She said, I'm so excited. I can't wait to start there. They've got an internal podcast. I'm listening to their CEO share stories. Yeah. So it really creates culture. Voice is quite intimate.
I like it.
It's happening. I love it. I know, because she knows I'm on the warpath.
Yeah. Interesting. I've been looking at a video job application. There's an app and there's a, you know, website for people to apply for casual hospitality jobs, and part of me thinking, oh yeah, but people don't want to go on video. But hello, everyone FaceTimes each other. That's not strange territory for people, and you know, people who are kind of much younger than me, I've talked to about this. It's just like there's actually not that kind of anxiety about showing your face or getting online and just talking. I mean, we're talking podcasts here. We're just talking about, you know, audio, aren't we? But it's just like pick the phone up and talk.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting you say that. The younger generation are probably much more comfortable with just doing that. Whereas I guess for my I still sometimes think, oh, I need a professional to come in and film it.
Yeah.
Ken, I've got a friend, Petri, you probably know her from LinkedIn, but she had a professional do all videos and the engagement is not very good. So she's actually going to just record them on her phone now.
Yeah.
So I think get as comfortable as you can get with just filming yourself or just, yeah, sharing your voice, the more suited you are to the market, for sure.
Nice. So let's say someone who's kind of really had a few wins, they've got a program of training activities happening. They're calling themselves a facilitator, but it's actually lots of short, sharp training. They've got people filming how to make a coffee and how to pull a Guinness and all sorts of things, and they're getting it up maybe onto a private YouTube channel or somewhere like that. And they really want to kind of grow their skills now, trainer slash facilitator or whatever. What's the, how do they keep growing and getting better at all this sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I'm pretty unconventional that I haven't actually done, apart from the Certificate 4 in Training and Assessment, but they don't really teach you how to facilitate. I haven't done anything too formal. So I guess I can share ways that I've picked it up. So number one would be an avid learner. And I think, Ken, you role model this more than anyone I know, but when COVID hit and I was confused around virtual facilitation, the way that I taught myself was I was just an observer. So I sat on like 40 different webinars and calls, and I was trying to pick up how they're asking questions. And I like to role model, like pick the favorite parts of the facilitators that I see, and then I'll start to bring that in. Now, I won't do like 40 different things in the next session I run, but I'll try one new thing. So I'll also challenge the assumptions that I have as well. Right at the beginning of this podcast, Ken, you said, the T word, the training word, just strikes fear in many of us. And I think we've been brought up with this conventional way of just sit there, watch PowerPoint, a person will talk over it. So what I tend to do as well to make a bit of a difference is map out all the assumptions I have with workshops. Like, you start with housekeeping, you have slides, people have to wait to answer questions. And then I go, well, what's the reverse of that? And I pick one thing that I could try differently.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, reverse all the assumptions. Yeah. That's it.
Go and have your toilet break before we start, not halfway through.
yeah, that's it. But also the fundamentals, like I think, and because you're in hospitality, I kind of joked, I did a podcast, it was like 12 rules for facilitation, but one of them was like, actually get good catering and good coffee because it makes a difference. And particularly in hospitality, if that's the industry that you're in, it's like, you've got to create, you know, companies have values like innovation, yet they don't do things innovatively. So I think hospitality.
Well, you reminded me, one of my things is if I am in a training room or something and I arrive and they've set it up with all the sweets middle of the table, I throw them all in the bin, you know, because I will not allow. I've actually got a sweet tooth, but all those minties and things like that in the middle of the table is just asking for sugar high and sugar swamp.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And be mindful. That's a really key point, Ken, is like, be mindful. It's not only about managing the time, it's about managing the energy.
And the space too. You're making me think, you know, it's just like the room and where people sit and just design it very precisely. I get a bit frustrated, you know, when people are things, it's just kind of accidental, and we've both walked into training rooms and think, oh my God, this table layout. And, you know, that's why you get there a couple of hours before, so you drag all the tables up the front or rearrange them. Or the people who set it up, they did the best they could. It's just that we have other ideas.
Yeah. I had Michael Bungay Stanier on the show, and he just talks about how he hates that boardroom style, and he just tries to like get rid of the tables and just get people sitting around like a campfire.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the reality for a lot of hospitality. So there is no boardroom and there's no hotel conference space. It's just like we've got the function room when it's not being used, or we're in two tables pulled together in the back of the restaurant and it's activity still happening. Talk to me about flipping things online, because the world is gradually opening up a little bit more, but we've learned a lot of great skills from facilitating training and events online, and so many that we don't want to give up. And I think it can be part of the mix now. You mentioned about having a company podcast. Love that idea. What else? How else can we kind of use Zoom to, zoom ahead?
Zoom ahead, I love that. Well, I guess something that when I was doing my research last year was just taking that analogy of, you know, why can we sit for hours watching Netflix? Like, why is it so binge-worthy? There's that entertainment factor, but also their ability to create that contrast.
But not be able to do an hour more than an hour on a Zoom call,
So it's like, why is that? And this is what I spoke to Mark Bowden in a podcast interview last year, and he's like, we've been conditioned to, when we look at a screen, that we expect to be entertained by that. It's like, oh, that's really interesting. So I thought, well, if you can't beat them, join them. Not that I have like television production on my Zoom calls, but I do create contrast in it. So what I'll do is, let's just say a 60-minute webinar, One of the questions I'll ask myself is, can I do this without any PowerPoint? Like, I love just not having that kit, just having to rip into a PowerPoint and just having myself full screen, but also maybe creating visuals and sharing them every now and then. But what that does is then creates a bit of contrast. So I think, how can I, in a 60-minute session, what can I do to weave that in? So it could be a slide, then Leanne with no slide, then a co-facilitator, then a question, then a video, as in, like, all of this, all of these different mediums over 60 minutes will create that engagement. Because, yeah, if you watch Netflix or any TV now, there's like a scene change every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's what we're up against.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. So it's almost like it'd be a breath of fresh air for someone said, yeah, actually you can't use PowerPoint because there is no screen. So we've got to build from there. Yes. And you're reminding me from way back. I like wine. I'm not really a wine trainer, but I was involved with a wine training session. And, you know, all those things about, you know, the aromas and flavors and comparison with berries and, you know, pineapple and all those crazy things. And often you see those wine wheels, which, you know, all the flavors around a circle. I don't know if you've ever seen that, you know, very complicated. Well, we didn't do that. We did. Actually, because we wanted to get people, you know, having sensations, we had cut up bits of pineapple. We had clipped grass that we kind of put on top of lawn. We had tobacco. We had black pepper ground, and we had it all on little trays. And people were sniffing, and it was fantastic. You know,
but what you just demonstrated there, Ken, is like taking it back to the intent behind it, and you've got to ask yourself, like. Sometimes I think people try and fill up 60 minutes, but it's not actually, it's not the stuff that's leading to the intent. So what you said there was like, well, we've got this graph here, this wheel, but what's the intent behind it? The intent is actually we want someone to sort of understand the sensation or the taste. Okay, well, why don't we give them that? You know, that was a clever question to ask.
Yeah. And what we're talking about here is actually leading people into new experiences and new sensations, really. Our trainees, our participants, you know, some uncomfortable topics maybe, or, you know, with wine tasting, like a lot of people, they know what Coke tastes like and bourbon and Coke tastes like, and that's about it. But, you know, youngies who are coming along and needing to recommend wine, actually, you're talking about a completely new vocabulary of not just words but also sensations and flavours. Yeah. And they might taste it, but then they've got to associate it. If you associate that with a strawberry or something, I don't know what direction I'm going in here, but I'm really interested in the facilitator has got to be able to take people on a journey into kind of unknown parts in a way.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think it is like the word facilitation. I think in Latin it's to make easy, but I think let's take it even broader than that. I think we actually are in the industry of change management because the goal is you don't want people coming to a workshop and they leave feeling the same way. You want some type of change or intervention to have happened so they think about things differently, so they have a new skill set. Like that is it. Like change experience management. That's what facilitation is all about. If you bring them into what you do, where it can fall flat is where, it is just a slide and we're going to talk about it because you talk about using taste. I mean, how powerful is taste and smell in getting that change out of someone?
I'm thinking about another session I remember because, you know, where there's alcohol can be arguments and even violence, you know, and all sorts of kind of tension that needs to be defused. And there's nothing more magical. I know this sounds a bit weird, but to see a really experienced security person who handles a bunch of blokes who've had too much and are smart asses, and they who knows how to just bring them down and quieten them down and not throw them out, because that's the last thing you really want to do. Sometimes you do have to do it, but to watch, to be able to deconstruct that person's skills. And I remember someone who was a hotel trainer around this sort of thing he had a guy who'd come in specially. He was really good at this. And he was like a big bruiser and, you know, very experienced in the industry for a long time. And actually not someone who you said, you know, what are the three things you always do? If he'd asked that, wouldn't have, you know, it would have just gone stum, you know, wouldn't have known what to say. But this trainer was using it all about, you know, examples. So tell me about, you know, the last time you did it and how did you do it? And his job was like reverse gear on the security guy.
Yeah.
And everyone was just like, oh, my God, this is so amazing, you know, so interesting.
Yeah, well, so the whole...
Then he was asking people to bring up situations, security situations, disputes where they hadn't really felt that they managed it very well and asking him for advice. It was so good.
I love that. See, these are, like, you're just coming up with like a thousand new ways of having that knowledge and skill transfer that doesn't meet that conventional concept of training, right? And but it's so much more effective. And I think you're still talking about it today, right, and memorable.
Yeah. Because I'm really keen to get chefs more involved in this too, and they're the first – well, they just have no time. Well, they do have time, actually, if you make it like something that sounds really fun and really interesting and only 10 minutes. But for them just to kind of bring out three or four different types of chocolate and talk about, you know, and do a blind tasting of between, you know, the crap supermarket, the crap stuff from the $2 shop, or, you know, the fine Belgian stuff, and then the Nestle and then the Cadbury, and what are you noticing, kids? What's the difference? What are you know, again, reverse gear. What are you noticing? Which one would you like more? Which do you think's the worst, you know?
I love that. Are you going to, like, hide the brand so they don't know which is which?
It's a blind taste. Blind.
Yeah, that's fun. I mean, and they're fun to watch as well. And can you spoke about time and I love competing against that objection from many clients because, you know, there's that famous YouTube video with, like, the blender, like, will this blend?
Yes.
And you think, you know, it's had millions of people viewing it. And, like, that is a blender company, right? So if they can attract attention, anyone can. Doesn't matter what role they're in. Like, people come to me and go, we got to give compliance training. We got to do, like, one of the best training sessions I went to internally was a code of conduct training session. Like,
wow,
on paper,
doesn't that sound deadly?
It was like 3 hours. Like, this is going to be awful. It was incredible. So the lawyers, the general counsels got up there. They were just telling war stories of things that had gone wrong and why. And it was like the best session ever.
Right. Because it's things on the edge that are the most interesting to war. Did they infringe? Did they break the rules or did they not? All that sort of, the black and white stuff, they killed someone or they slept with the wrong person. That's easy.
Yeah, that's easy. Yeah, it's all like the hypothetical.
You're reminding me with the timing thing too. I mean, we've all got, you know, one of these things and it's actually a great thing to appoint maybe one of the quietest people as the timekeeper and they put the alarm clock on their phone. It's 10 minutes and I mean... I've used that to shut people up who talk too much. But you know, to structure your time really kind of tightly, you've got actually good tools for that as well.
Yeah, and it's much easier on virtual as well. I mean, you can do it in both ways. And I like that you talk about assigning roles as well to give people – yeah, so I have timekeepers. Sometimes I'll have – like when we go for a break, I'll give someone the role of being the whip. So they've got to make sure that everyone's back in time. And like you said, it just brings in people that may not be so vocal, but they feel like they're part of it as well. Scribes, right? So just because you're the trainer doesn't mean that you have to write all the notes down. You can assign that role out as well.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. And I think having some kind of record of things, it sounds a little bit, you know, businessy, you know, talk about taking the minutes. But I remember when the job I was in until a while ago, you know, our weekly huddles, we actually weren't taking notes. And it was important, but no one was kind of, there was no kind of accountability, you know, in the old minutes of the last meeting, which is the formal structure, we actually were able to and, you know, as I say that, guess what? A lot of people actually don't know how to summarize. So don't assume just if you give that job to someone, they actually know how to do it.
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, that was me as well. I remember Googling this is way back quite a while ago where I was asked to I had to rebrand. I was working for a TAFE in Western Australia and I was in charge of rebranding the TAFE. So they threw me into the role of like chairperson. And I was like, I was like, you know, on Google, like, how do you run a meeting? How do you just self-taught as well. I think that's a really important point is that, again, thinking about the assumptions we have around people.
Yeah.
And because that can make people feel very off.
Yeah.
You know.
And we're giving actually an important role to for the business owner or the general manager. If you want someone to be facilitator, trainer, actually they need lots of support and they've got a kind of a skill gap probably. And let's help them get better at that as well. I kind of went off on, like I always do, on interesting tangents and sort of jumped away from Zoom and online training, because I think we've got possibilities now to get people up to speed or just kind of have regular training sessions. What have you seen? I'm still thinking about the general manager's podcast at a pub. What other things, what other ways do you think Zoom could be used for regular facilitation?
Yeah, well, I think I can take examples from other industries and bring them in. So one, I was working with, again, a mining client last year, and they just had, so they're just weekly, they had standardized meetings, but they weren't very long at all. It was like they had basically, you talked about, they're very into data and metrics. So it was just a stand-in, just a quick check-in with everyone. You'd actually even
like safety their numbers and those sort of things.
Yeah, but also what I loved about it the most was they had this personal tracker. So it had things like, you know, energy-wise, how are you feeling out of a 10? So a 10 or an emoji. Then you'd have like, what are you working on? So if mine was like, because I was running 2020 kilometers last year, I'd have like my running metrics up there as well.
Oh, okay.
And so you could even just track when someone, so like a few times I was just so busy / stressed, I was in the red a few times, and that signals that, hey, you can pick someone up, you know, like, oh, just checking in with you, like what's going on. So that was quite cool. You can do Zoom for that. Of course, you've seen in hospitality, I mean, hospitality pretty much ran this last year with like doing virtual wine tastings and cool things like that. Online, but maybe you can, I mean, broader than just connecting with your staff on Zoom through check-in meetings, recording them, putting them onto an audio platform would be, you know, engaging with your clients as well. So hopping on like a Zoom call with them, perhaps just to get some feedback or, I don't know, like it really is. It's basically trying to rethink the standard 60, 30 minute thing of Zoom, rethinking that it needs to be one facilitator running it, like mixing that up.
Yeah, and it could be a WhatsApp group too, which is, you know, got a little video session or something like that. But and I think you've highlighted really that, you know, Zoom facilitation is actually kind of like almost a table stakes skill that pretty much anyone in training or leadership needs to have, no problem.
Yes.
We're having a Zoom, you know, once a week. And again, you sort of inspire me to kind of think of answers to the questions I'm asking. But, you know,
that's so good.
The big issue has always been, you know, we want to hold a weekly huddle, but some people are off that day and, you know, how do we get everyone together at the same time? Well, actually, we swap to Zoom and we do it that way, and there's a recording afterwards if you weren't there or something like that.
Yeah, and even like those times where I was like flying in and I couldn't be at the meeting, I'd just update the spreadsheet and someone would talk on my behalf and go, oh, yeah, checked in with Leanne, she's good, da-da-da. So at least you're being represented through an asynchronous format like a Google Sheet.
Yeah, what else comes to mind is, you know, we're thinking about our new facilitator. They've ditched the training title. They're now a facilitator or a learning facilitator or whatever. Any other particular skills do you think they should be embracing or enthusiastic about?
Yeah, well, I think it is about, well, it depends on where they want to go with their facilitation career. They want to start their business or they just want to support their business and being in upskilling people as well. The, like we talked about, the biggest objection to doing any of this is the investment in time, the investment in resources. So I think probably first of all would be, if you're really keen on taking this on, updating your skill, be finding out like what is something just in time that the business needs help with, what has a sense of urgency, and creating your first sort of program or intervention based on that just to get your foot in
urgent
the door.
Skills, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So something that's quite painful, like going, right, all right, I can help you with this. And then just kicking that off, starting, being a bit loose but also having a bit of a framework into what you're going to cover. And I think I also like, I kind of have a bit of a rule. It's like, you know, a few minutes of content, then a question, then an activity, right? That's, you've got 30 to 45 minutes right there just on the content, a framework, a conversation, a share back. So I would, you know, instead of like leaping to lots more content like we just spoke about as a first-time facilitator, I think the shift now is really on content curation and what can you find in your expertise that will hit the mark for the group that you're working with. So it's like contextualizing it for the group, finding those examples, I don't want to overwhelm people because it's like the best career ever, most transferable skills around, but also your presence. You gave the example of the security guard who really calmed those people down. It was probably something he did like non-verbally, but he might not have even been able to explain that created that sense of safety. Mm. And I think making sure that you have that presence, that you're not running around like trying to get your PowerPoints already 5 minutes before. And think about that type of experience you want to create.
Yeah, and thinking back to your Canadian experience, the strange foreign woman with a bunch full of blokes. Maybe, you know, thinking back, you know, I'm sure you've replayed that one many times, but, yeah, there would have been different kind of preparation, wouldn't there, for you to be kind of hitting and running rather than falling, stumbling.
Yeah, and that's absolutely, I mean, the psychological safety part of making people, you want really very quickly for people to feel like, A, I belong here, B, this is relevant for me, and C, I'll be willing to contribute. And so there's activities that you can stack up like right up front. So one thing, one of my core philosophies with any type of workshop facilitation is engage early and engage often. I think the problem with what I was doing in Canada was I got up there, I think for like 30 minutes, just like talking. Without even engaging anyone. So setting the scene that...
Arms folding all around. Uh-huh.
Yes. Gosh, I should have recorded that moment. It was horrific. I'm still learning. Like, you know, sometimes I'll ask a question in Zoom and no one will answer. And I think, okay, what has happened there? Is the question not right? Is what's going on? So, yeah, the sequencing right up front is quite a...
Yeah, and you've brought up an important skill, I think, that we all develop, we never stop, is asking great questions,
yes. You know,
really good questions. And I love listening to certain podcasters who, wow, what a great questions. You know, one stage I was actually had a whole list of things I'd keep writing down questions. I don't know where it is, but it's...
Oh, I'd love to see that list. Powerful.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that list.
I'm... decided I want to develop my facilitation career and I want to be kind of, people are going to find me on LinkedIn or I can send them my CV, but how do we develop our public profile? Or what do you suggest, you know, without it becoming laborious, but given that we are writing things down, we might be recording a few short videos and things like that, how do I make myself public and more known?
Yeah, well, I think I created a framework about this, the Booked Out Facilitator framework, and I was trying to re-engineer some of the success I had very quickly after leaving my corporate job, and I boiled it down to three things. So one is the craft. It's how good you are at delivering the workshops and the experiences, which is, and I think this is actually quite aligned with hospitality as well, like how good is your food? How good are your drinks? Like that's your service, that's the craft. But unfortunately, there's so many great restaurants out there that are good at the craft but not good at the other two things, which are your connections. They're really important. This is a people in like everything. This is a definitely a people industry. Your connections and also your content. Now you asked the question specifically around the content piece. I think to stand out, the philosophy, it's back to what I talked about in getting a workshop to stand out to, is actually to challenging assumptions of what you're seeing out there. So you want to break patterns on LinkedIn. So what I'm seeing on LinkedIn videos is people shooting in an office, you know, just talking head. It's like, well, what can you do differently? The videos that attract my attention are people
boring.
That are out. Totally boring. People that are out, like even just walking in a field, it's like blue skies. It's like, that's attractive. I'm interested in that. So I would actually then, that process of what I said before of like mapping out everything you know about a workshop and reversing it, what are you currently seeing? Okay, and what can you do that's a little bit differently? But also, and bringing in that hook of why someone should watch as well. And one more thing, Ken, just one more thing. I know I get excited about this part, is I would actually start, again, listening more and learning the lyrics of the people that you're trying to serve.
So learning the lyrics.
Learning the lyrics. Yeah, so what I did 12 months ago, you might have, I just went on a listening tour. I got people to book in 20-minute calls with me. On Zoom, I recorded them. So it was basically us listening. Like I asked maybe one question, like what's on your mind? And it's amazing how people can just riff off that. And then I got the transcript and I'll see what kind of phrases and words they were talking about. And then I'd create podcast episodes about it. So, and that's when people come to me and go, oh, wow, you're actually in my mind. Like you're reading my mind. It's like, no. I've just picked what you've said, one line here, and I've turned it into a podcast or content.
Yeah. Wow.
So I'm actually getting out of my assumption of what I think people want, and I'm just giving them what they want. Yeah. And I'm not being creative at all.
What's on your mind question. Yeah.
Isn't it great? Yeah. Mm. Well, it's the question that Facebook asks when you know, that those former status updates. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Great discussion, Leah. And I could go on and on, but we'll wrap up now. How do people find you? How do people connect with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn would be great. Just search for Leanne Hughes. I'm connected to Ken. My podcast, which ended episode 200, but it's full of value if you want
wonderful.
To jump into facilitation.
Yeah, I really recommend it. Yeah,
first time facilitator.
And I'll put links to all of these in the show notes for sure.
Amazing. And then if you're curious around building a career in facilitation, head on over to bookedoutfacilitator.com.
Terrific. Okay. Thank you so much. That's fun.
Thanks, Ken. It's been a delight.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.